Okay, so we'll start. So as we just touched upon in the previous session, that how creation start, that whole process from the one indefinable, ineffable soul existence, where everything is there, but it's there only as a potential possibility. It is, nothing is even begun to realize itself. So if we come in contact with that state, then there is no, creation will appear like an illusion, because we don't know the link. That's why Sri Aurobindo says supermind is the intermediate link. If we have the experience of the absolute self-existence, ekameva dvitiyam, and that we can have in even while we are in the mind, because it's everywhere, by the mind concentrating itself on the one divine presence, or on the one, or on Brahman, any which way, you can enter into contact with that absolute existence. Of course, it's not as simple as I have concentrated and I got it. But we can come in contact with that. But when we come in contact with that absolute existence this way, then we will not understand creation. We won't even understand if he has created this. Because we have not entered. It's not that this is different, that is different. They are all together. But we have chosen to touch that absolute existence. And therefore we won't understand creation. It will remain a mystery. And we'll have to bring in some inexplicable Maya or something or somebody else and explain it. So that we have seen earlier, the different ways of looking at it. And if we don't understand existence, I mean creation, then there is no question of divine life. We can't just have divine life just by good thinking. We should do good, be good. You should be nice towards everybody. But with the mind as the operating system, because mind is in ignorance, I may have a profound inner experience and yet my mind may still be in ignorance. That is the strange part. One of the places Sri Aurobindo says that St. Augustine was a great mystic, but doesn't mean he was a great psychologist. Because the soul has contacted, but the mind is not ready to receive that light or understand. Why? Because it has come in direct contact. And that is a very stunning experience. So when you have that and this, then it's natural. Brahma Satyam Jagat Mithya. Now going into details of explaining that and what it means, implies, that's different. The real meaning of mithya is mythos, that's different. But we have experience. Now, but if we want a divine life, we must meet the Creator and ask Him, what are your intentions? It's like when mother was asked, what is the difference between we are acting ordinarily and when we have become yoginist and acting from the supermind point of view. She says, supermind takes interest in all earthly things, but in a different way. And then she says, it is like knowing the plot and the play and not knowing it. So if I am caught, I don't know the play, I don't know the plot. People often say, but you know, we want to know. But if you want to know, then life divine is there. Then there is yoga. Otherwise, we cannot know. We have to use all kinds of things. God has created this world. He only knows. Uni ki maya, wahi jane, etc., etc. Catchphrases. Why? Because we are sparing the effort of thought. And thought must climb. The Vedic rishis climbed from layer to layer. Seventh, eighth, ninth layer of thought. That's why perhaps they use the word cloud nine. I don't know what it means. But the rishis speak about navagavahas. The nine levels of thought, even dasagavahas, but that's very rare. Thought is climbing to reach that point, trying to understand, seeking, and eventually the light they see when they reach so far in thought, then suddenly they had the illumination standing on the borders and they saw that truth hidden by a golden lid, something of that light filtered across, and they were still dazzled. This is Satya Dharmaya Drishtai. I want to know. So this is what Sri Aurobindo and the mother are revealing to us. Its importance is, if we want this world to become better and ourselves to participate in this creation as divine life. If we don't want, if we only want God and be done with life and death, there are many paths. So that's why when Pavitrada came after his rendezvous in Mongolia, where he lived for 9 months in those difficult conditions, 9 months or 2 years, I've forgotten, and trying to practice that kind of yoga, and he was always practicing something. And then when he came, he asked, met Sri Aurobindo, and Sri Aurobindo asked him, what do you want? He said, liberation. Then Sri Aurobindo says liberation is something that there are few yogis in India who can grant you that. But if you want something more, then you can stay on. Why does he say the yoga ends where others, you know, my yoga begins where others end? Yogas begin with liberation. What is liberation? Freedom from avidya, ignorance. Liberation is not about suddenly I have gone to paradise from where I am not going to come back. Because who? How can a frightened man get liberation? I have not understood this logic. Oh, world is so painful. I am complaining all the time, frightened. I want Bhagwan, isse mujhe mukt kar do janjal se. It's so foolish to believe. Because Brahman is Nirbhaya. All those who have realized, who have been liberated, ask Swami Vivekananda, Guru Nanak, all the great masters, they have not gone out of fear of creation. They have gone out of love for the Lord, which is a different thing altogether. So anyway, liberation, he said, there are others who can grant. And liberation is necessary, because if we are under the spell of the lower Maya, we cannot imagine a divine life, the higher Maya and supermind is out of question. So the first thing is to realize the divine, to get freed from ignorance. Ignorance and divine life don't go together. But then after liberation from ignorance, where we know who we are, where we know the Lord, and the mind begins to receive some kind of illumination, reflection, then we are ready for the transformation. But before transformation, the mind receives reflections from the supermind. Because now a liberated mind has come out of the zone of complete darkness. And what it means is something very interesting. So if we see the three poises of the supermind, which we just touched upon. So in the first poise, it is an all-comprehending. In Sachidanand, absolute everything is there, but it's all, I don't like to use the word, but like a pell-mell. Every possibility is there, equally realizable, equally infinite. Everything is there. But creation can't be done like that. There has to be a principle which would bring out and order and cast them out. So there is the truth consciousness, the supramental truth consciousness. What it does, it takes these possibilities from the Turiya into Pragya. And it starts ordering them. So what happens in the supermind? First step is, unity is there. But somewhere the seed of multiplicity has begun. Multiplicity, all possibilities, all centers. But unity is overpowering. So multiplicity cannot express itself. It's like children growing under a very able father. So that's why they say they have to move out of the shadow. So in supermind, first layer, highest layer, where there is omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, everything, the unity is so overpowering that multiplicity cannot emerge. So the next step is unity and multiplicity. The child goes to school but comes back home. First is in home. Unity, overpowering. Then goes. There slowly as he enters adolescence, he learns things which dad doesn't know. Dad, my bachcha, sadhu bachcha hai. But he is now entering the ways of the world. So there is multiplicity and there is unity. So there is unity and multiplicity. So how does he create multiplicity? Simply by several powers of concentration within this unity. What does it mean? This body is a unity. But if there is a pain in the liver or pain in some place, my concentration goes there. Equally, if I concentrate on a part, in asana, this is the essence. Asanas help because When we stretch, there is a portion where the concentration of energy goes. That's how the ultimate principle of asana is this. It is through this concentration. So within that one unity, several points of concentration emerge. What are these several points? Now we have the Jivatma. That's where we come from. Our true home is there in the supermind. That's why we are always seeking perfection, perfection, perfection. Why? Because we come from supermind, which is the home of perfection. So Jivatma, several. So there is unity and multiplicity. Third step, child is not only in school. In school, he comes home, there is the washing off. Now he must enter the world at large. So there is the comprehending supermind. Then there is the representative supermind, where in each of these centers, supermind shows the real idea. Let's put it like this. This will become this and that will become that. It's a way of saying mental image. And all will be divine. This will become this and that will become that is not hero and villain. That's the mind's misreading. All will become divine. But each Jivatma will represent some aspect of the infinite. It will have its own unique place in the plot, but consciously it will play. And so the play will be multiplication of delight. Then the next step is each of them must enter into the adventure of time and space. They must take that step. Dad, I am going to work. Where are you posted? I am posted in Jorhat. Oh, so far, Mama is crying. Dad, here of course Mama, Dad are not crying. They are happy. Because now those parents who trust what they have given to the children, they are happy. They know. Jahan jayega, there. But if you have not given the right sanskars, then you are unhappy. You are afraid. Why you are afraid? Because you have not put the right things. Anyway, so that's a play in ignorance. But just as an example. Next step is they are going to venture into the adventure of time and space. They have not yet started. So that becomes apprehending supermind. So we have the comprehending supermind. Comprehension means totality. So everything is there. Unity, multiplicity has begun, but it is overshadowed by unity. Second, unity and multiplicity. And the third, multiplicity begins to overshadow unity. One step further, the multiplicity enters into ignorance. But that we will talk about later. Now, when a soul is liberated from ignorance, but yet in the zone of the mind, so we use the word very loosely. Anything beyond the rational mind, human mind is, yes, we can use the word spiritual. Shivindu used the word spiritual mind. There is a difference between spiritual mind and super mind. Spiritual mind is what we call as spiritual. Why it is called spiritual? Because there is the atmosphere of the Lord begins there. That atmosphere is what spirit is. The word spirit is the atmosphere of the Lord. And that we find from higher mind onwards, particularly the illumined intuitive mind onwards. So it is spiritual, but it is not yet the super mind. Super mind where there is a complete reversal. Now you understand the creation. Spiritual beings cannot understand creation. They will either use the word maya, lila, some terms. It is an uplifted state than ordinary humanity. But Sri Aurobindo wants us something more. That's why when someone wrote a humorous poem, The Last of the Rishis, for Sri Aurobindo, Dilip Kumar Roy said, what has he written? You are the last of the rishis. Sri Aurobindo said, maybe he is right because what is going to come is Superman, which is not going to be ethical, saintly. None of these terms will apply. This is Sri Aurobindo's own words. Superman is not a highly ethical being or a saintly being or a holy being or a sadhu or none of these. Because it is God himself playing with himself consciously. Just imagine what that is. Nothing can really touch that. So all these three poises fall upon the seeking soul in the mind. From that comes the three great schools of Indian philosophy. When the mind, because it cannot comprehend, only supermind, all these are together. When it comprehends unity, and sees the multiplicity only as a shadow, there is Advaita. When it comprehends multiplicity mainly, at the unity is there, but it does not, it's overshadowed by multiplicity, then there is Dvaita, dualism. Multiplicity is more prominent. Of course, it can join with the unity. It can arrive at unity, like a river arriving into the sea. That is Dvaita. God is different. I am different because multiplicity, but I have awakened to the psychic being or the Jivatma, and therefore I know I am a portion of God. So I can enjoy the relationship or I can merge into Him. And when the unity and multiplicity are simultaneously reflected in the mind of the spiritual being, it becomes Dvaita Advaita or Vishishta Advaita or qualified monism. Meaning thereby, I am like a wave from the ocean, but I am still the ocean. That is Dvaita Advaita. Advaita is wave, etc. Don't bother. Only the ocean. And Dvaita is river, ocean. The only common thing is they are water. River will merge into the sea through worship, through prayer. It can merge into the sea or be uplifted by the grace of the sea. That is Dvaita. What is Shurubindo bringing? He says, river, ocean is fine. But where has ocean got its energy from? He makes his eyes lift up and see the sun. Sun is lifting the clouds. Vapor, further. Out of the sun, its cooling effect, waters have emerged. That's how the Isha Upanishad says. Tasmin napo matarishva dadati. The water streams of life have emerged from there. And he says, there is the secret. And if you understand that secret, then the river, ocean, waves, drops, all this will look like a child's play. But that's how the mind sees. So now we have, I think, with clarity, the three major schools of Indian philosophy emerging from the three poises of the supermind. Not that they touch supermind, but the rays of supermind became reflected in their mentality, because they were liberated from ignorance. But what we have done is one step lower. We discuss Dvaita and Advaita and fight with each other. And somebody even asked me which school of Vedanta Sri Aurobindo is. So I felt like saying Dvaita, Dvaita, Dvaita Pare. So then I said realistic Vedanta. He said, what does it mean? I said, Jagat Satyam Namithya, Brahma Satyam Namithya. How can that be? Because Brahman has dreamed the world. So if you say he dreamed wrongly, then Brahman cannot be by its definition the divine reality. So it is realistic Vedanta, which is not yet there. So we'll quickly read just these couple of things. Okay. Some very powerful lines. The triple status of supermind. Page 152. We have started with the assertion of all existence as one being. Being. That's what God is. He's, that is conscious of itself. Therefore it is being. Of course we have painted that God is a personal deity who is must have a beard, must be sitting with a carrot and rod, must have some consultant nearby, must be at the mercy of my ego. There to, that is our problem, not his problem. But even that is his problem. In the last analysis, we have to start with limited relations with God before we can enter into the vastness of the supermind. As one being whose essential nature is consciousness, one consciousness whose active nature is force or will, and this being is delight. Now we understand why Krishna Purushottama Anandame. Because it's very, that being is delight. In the, toward the end of the fourfold Brahman, at the end, Shobindo describes in book 11, delight. Delight where the head and everything of that form, and how he describes delight, eternal and inalienable bliss of existence, bliss of consciousness, bliss of force or will, whether concentrated in itself and at rest or active and creative. This is God and this is ourselves in our essential, our non-phenomenal being. That's why the soul is immortal. Why? Because its origin is in supermind. That's why Jivatma is immortal. And it shares the eternity of the Lord. Because supermind is before time and space. They are started there. But to reach that point, it's almost like a vanishing point. That Sri Aurobindo could do it. But no yogi has done it. Even where something of that got reflected, they ultimately took one line and left the rest. That plays the universe, and that delight is the sole cause, motive and object of cosmic existence. The divine consciousness possesses that play and delight eternally and inalienably. Our essential being, our real self, which is concealed from us by the false self or mental ego, also enjoys that play, which our essential being, the Jivatma, enjoys that. That's why the soul, it drinks experience like a strengthening wine. When we touch the soul, it is happy with everything. You don't have to tell it, oh, why you are happy. It says, yes, it's all delight. It experiences that delight in all actions, activities. What the ego abhors, the soul takes in and has delight. It knows that the ego must be crucified so that the true self may emerge. That's how the Dvasuparna, one which is caught up in the play and the other which is sitting and enjoying the two birds. If we aspire therefore to a divine life, we cannot attain to it by any other way than by unveiling this veiled self in us. Without the psychic being, without that true self, we cannot. By the mind, we can enter into some kind of absolute impersonal. Because if the mind approaches, it will go to the point where the supermind's border is and it cannot go beyond. So it will just experience Brahman as impersonal or the sagun, nirgun, or sagun as through the veil. Tremendous power, it will say something. So at the over mind, it will either choose this line or that line, as we see in Savitri, described beautifully. So what, how we can do? By unveiling this veiled self in us, by mounting from our present status in the false self or mental ego to a higher status in the true self, the Atman, by entering into that unity with the divine consciousness, which something superconscient in us always enjoys. So there is the central being, as Shobindo is described like that, which is always enjoying that unity in the supermind. That's our origin. But it projects a little ray into this play of time and space to play at ball with time and circumstance. In the divine comedy, a participant. So that is the psychic being. They are connected, interconnected with each other. We'll talk about it. There's a whole chapter dedicated to that. Otherwise, we could not exist, but which our conscious mentality has forfeited. So this is the step which we have to take. We can't just automatically, it won't be that something will happen. Okay, because God's will, ultimately everything will happen. 1 million years, things will happen. But there's a reason why the supermind is active now. So we can take that true position. The true name, next page, the true name of this causality is divine law. And the essence of this law is an inevitable self-development of the truth of the thing. That is, as idea, in the very essence of what is developed, it is a previously fixed determination of relative movements out of the stuff of infinite possibility. See, what does it mean? Obey the divine law. Otherwise, he's sitting with a carrot and rod. No. What is the meaning of this obeying the divine law? It is dharma. It is unfolding in time. It is not something fixed for all times, do this, don't do this. It is in fact not about doing and not doing. It's about that whatever takes us closer to the divine, individually and collectively, is dharma. Whatever cuts us individually and collectively, delays, retards, obstructs, resists the unfolding of the divine is adharma. That makes it so simple. Essence of this law. And what is the reward and punishment, if at all? When we live by dharma, we come closer to the divine. When we come closer to the divine, we become more conscious because he is consciousness. We become more happy, not happy, delight, because he is delight. We experience immortality because he is the substance of immortality. This is the reward. What is the punishment if we live according to dharma? These truths are veiled from us. So life becomes a constant struggle, as if, oh, why has he made me? Why did he make life like this? Always I have to struggle, always I have to suffer. Are a fool, you are suffering because of yourself. Take off the veil, suffering will be gone. That's why, because we can't understand the place. Sri Ramakrishna said in strange ways, he could sense, you know, intuitive mind, you can sense these truths. So he says, God loves. When? He says, when the lawyer has, people want two people to come together, when God has decided to separate them. And when doctor says, I am going to cure this child, when God has decided to take him back. How can we understand this place? Certainly not with the ego and the ignorance. But when we see things in the totality, then we realize, oh, this separation and joining, all this is to develop a higher and higher harmony in the totality. This life and death are not opposites of each other, but complementary processes for the divine life to emerge out of all life. Then the vision begins to change. So that is the original causality. Okay? The being that is thus conscient in what we call God, and he must obviously be omnipresent, omniscient, omnipotent. That's what the supermind is. But it doesn't act arbitrarily. That's our idea. It will act according to its own law, its own rhythm, rit-chit. You can't say that, I have asked, he is omnipotent, magic. No, because then it will disturb that total evolution of the process. So we have to align. We go back again and again to that supreme wisdom. Why then we are saved when we pray to the divine? Sometimes. Why? Because that's how it has been. We suddenly take one step further. There are several determinisms which operate. And we move from one loop of time into another loop of time. Without going through the passage of death. That's how it is operating. It's a vast and complex play. Unimaginable, unfathomable. And when we can't comprehend it, that's why Udho says, na, Udho karman ki gati nyari. What is that? Ujjwal pankh diye bagle ko. Koyal kehi bhi dikari. Arre, koyal is welcome. She announces mangoes have come. And bagla is, looks good, but not welcome. Murakh murakh raj karat hain, pandit firat bhikari. Why? Because pandit have to awaken. No. If pandit is doing raj, he will become the same murakh. So pandit has to go through a preparation before he can really sit on the throne. Udho, but he passed it on to karma. Karman ki gati nyari. But it is the play of the divine. So this is the omniscient, omnipresent, which is manifesting in time through all the forces. And all these forces are his, so he knows them. He knows how to pull the strings, and he is already pulling them and pushing them. So we have these three poises. The first and primary poise of the supermind, which found the inalienable unity of things. The second poise of the supermind, 156, 157, the divine consciousness stands back in the idea from the movement. which it contains, realizing it by a sort of apprehending consciousness, following it, occupying and inhabiting its works, seeming to distribute itself in its forms. In each name and form it would realize itself as the stable conscious self, the same in all, but also it would realize itself as a concentration of conscious self following and supporting the individual play of movement. This concentration supporting the soul form would be the individual divine or jivatma, as distinguished from the universal divine or the all-constituting self. So we have spoken about it. A third poise of the supermind would be attained if the supporting concentration were no longer to stand at the back, as it were, of the movement, inhabiting it with a certain superiority to it, and so following and enjoying, but were to project itself into the movement and to be in a way involved in it. Here, the character of the play would be altered, but only insofar as the individual divine would so predominantly make the play of relations with the universal and its other forms the practical field of its conscious experience. Now we understand why the father said, Ja, Simran, jile apni jindagi. That's when it steps out. So when it goes to jio its jindagi, does it mean father has left and abandoned? No. He's keeping a watch. Simran is always free to call. As long as Simran knows, I think the name is right, as long as Simran knows that she is always connected with the father, but having her own experiences, it is delight. But the day, because her father is in her, he knows she is my daughter. Wherever she goes, he flows into her. But if she suddenly feels my father cannot, then there is a problem. Then there is, world is frightening. You see, that's how life is. In life, so many things we see which are connected, because all life is built on a single plan ultimately. All the examples you can find here. So this is the last step. This tertiary poise would be therefore that of a sort of fundamental blissful dualism in unity. So that's how we have the different forms. And finally, last passage. The language of the Upanishads, the supreme ancient authority for these truths of a higher experience, when they speak of the divine existence which is manifesting itself, implies the validity of all these experiences. We can only assert the priority of the oneness to the multiplicity, which is the first state, status of the supermind, Advait of that total monism. What is it called? Shuddha Advait, pure Advait, one without a second. A priority not in time, but in relation of consciousness. And no statement of supreme spiritual experience, no Vedantic philosophy denies this priority or the eternal dependence of the many on the one. This is the beginning. So you can't deny this. So it is true. Even dualistic schools and Visishtadvaita, they all ultimately agree to the ultimate one reality. It is because in time the many seem not to be eternal but to manifest out of the one and return into it as their essence that the reality is denied. But it might equally be reasoned that the eternal persistence, or if you will, the eternal recurrence of the manifestation in time, is a proof that the divine multiplicity is an eternal fact of the supreme beyond time. So in the supermind, it's an eternal fact. Maharas is going on all the time with the Lord and his divine energies. So if you see in time, you may say, oh, souls come and go. You may even doubt there is an individual soul. You see individualities which emerge and go. So like the Buddha, or like this Advait, the Shankaracharya philosophy, you may say individuality is only a practical thing, but not an eventual reality. But from the supermind, it is a reality. It has its own eternal relation with the Lord. So you can see it that way. thus emphasizing the sole truth of the Unitarian consciousness, we observe the play of the divine unity, erroneously rendered by our mentality into the terms of real difference, that there is the divine ekamedvityam and this play is different from the player. This is an error. But not satisfied with correcting this error of the mind by the truth of a higher principle, so instead of ascending further and discovering the real truth, what they did, we assert that the play itself is an illusion. Why? Because we stopped at this first touch of the ray, not ascent into the highest layers of supermind, but that light falling into the mind. Or emphasizing the play of the one in the many, we declare a qualified unity. This is what Vishishta Advaita is, Dvaita Advaita is, the doctrines. And regard the individual soul as a sole form of the supreme, but would assert the eternity of this qualified existence and deny altogether the experience of a pure consciousness in an unqualified oneness. This is the story of Brahma stealing all the gop and gopis. And Krishna brings out of himself. He rushes back. He says, why these fellows don't know how to behave with Krishna? They are treating him like anybody. I know Krishna is God. How can these tuchh prani be so close to him? So what do? They rob. And he begins to doubt Krishna. Why is he playing with them like this? He's supposed to be serious. God is serious. How is he playing with them like ordinary mortals? They are doing prank and he's doing pranks. What has happened to Krishna? Something has gone wrong. So what does he do? He steals the, by his maya. He does have, all of them have their maya, you know. So he steals them and hides them in Brahmalok. He says, now I'll teach everybody a lesson. And as he goes back, he sees the same gopi are playing with Krishna. He says, what's gone wrong? So he follows him. Maybe some mistake, but when these gopis go back home, their parents, everybody, they're just the same life. So it's like there is nothing which is broken. It's continuous. All of them go home. They are connecting with what happened yesterday, what happened day before, the food they like. They are just the same. So he says something is wrong. He goes back there. And there he sees all of them are there, safe in Brahmalok. He comes back again and sees all of them are here. This is what is called as qualified unity and multiplicity. Each soul, each gopi are none else but Krishna. For the joy of the play is manifesting them as if they are different. He can bring out any number. It's so beautiful, no? That's why qualified monism is so attractive. And some people even ask, is your philosophy Dvaita Advaita or Vishishta Advaita? Shobindu said, no, it's not, because it touches all of them together. It goes beyond them. So this is one way. And regard the individual soul as a soul form of the Supreme. Or again, emphasizing the play of difference, we assert that the Supreme and the human soul are eternally different, and reject the validity of an experience which exceeds and seems to abolish that difference. That's why the dualistic schools don't have yoga. They have religion. Dualistic school, God is up there somewhere. You can't see him. You can't relate with him. You can pray to him. And you have to obey this law which he made from old. But there is no yoga. And that's why dualistic schools have this problem. After a time, they wither off. Because without yoga, you can't sustain. It'll turn into an institution, organized religion. That's what we see. What happened to the two major dualistic schools, Christianity and Islam? It's a dualistic school. Even if you grant the ultimate, God is always there. Nobody else can be. And to that extent that if anybody said he is one with God, he became a kafir. Even we know that, I'm forgetting who was that mystic whose head, he was beheaded, because every time he'll go into that state of ecstasy, he'll say, I am God, I am Allah. Just like, you know, I'm Brahmasmi. Oh, you are a blasphemy, blasphemy. Nobody can be. There's the last one. He also cannot claim. There is ultimately that one. So he said, I don't know, did I say that? Because when he came into outer consciousness, did I say that? Yes, oh my God, I am so sad. How can I say that? Then one day he told his disciples, next time I do it, you behead me because I am doing blasphemy. And he became one with Allah. Thanks to the disciples, a bit prematurely. Didn't have the joy of experiencing it in his body. So dualistic schools are like that. There is no meeting point except through prayer, worship, and through living according to the law. But there is no fundamental joining of the two. The soul is not a portion of the Supreme. How it has come, God knows. Or perhaps he also doesn't know, because he must be wondering, this school I have not created. That is a man-made understanding of divine. And Shobindra is giving us the divine understanding, the divine vision, the divine wisdom of the divine, through the lips of the divine, through the pen of the divine, and he's speaking to the divine in our own hearts. We'll meet tomorrow. We'll only be a summary session, and because day after tomorrow is the supramental day, so we'll touch upon that, but from the point of view of the life divine.